Next on BYUSN, it's BYU Football, That 70s Show. Over the next hour, we explore the success and nostalgia of maybe the most overlooked decade in BYU's 100-season history.
We'll highlight some of the great teams, players, and moments from the decade and talk to not one but two of the pioneers in the quarterback factory, Gary Scheide and Mark Wilson.
QB legends at the heart of BYU Football, That 70s Show, and it starts now. Let's go.
...1978 brought a new look to the Western Athletic Conference, but WAC football was as exciting and wide open as ever.
Wilson, in the pocket, going over the middle, to the 20-yard line of Stavis, inside the 10, they score again!
The snap, Wilson to throw for it. Did he catch it? He did!
Down, going over the middle, it's completed the 35-yard line, inside the 20, the 10, and another touchdown! Under a lot of pressure, going deep, touchdown, just like that. And look at that speed. Down the sidelines, he goes for the touchdown.
Welcome to All BYU right. Sports Nation.
Go.
Presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. 2024 marks the 100th season of BYU football. And to help cast an appropriate spotlight on the rich history through a century of Cougar football, we are dedicating a handful of shows to review key eras within BYU football. And we begin with the 1970s. So, Jerem, bell bottoms, blended polyester mixes, and Brigham Young football.
Yeah, we need more ruffles, I think, in our attire. We're missing it. But what a decade. This is often forgotten. We talk about the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and so on. The 70s really set the stage, Spence, for what was going to be the golden era of BYU football, which we're going to devote not one but two parts to, by the way, for the 80s. But the 70s really set the stage, and of course, it was the hiring of Lavelle Edwards that got things kicked off.
No question. So let's do this. BYU football, That 70s Show, goes now as we look back at the most impactful moments from what we believe is an overlooked decade. And you were just alluding to that, Jerem. The hiring of Lavelle Edwards in 1972 kicks this thing off.
He's an assistant from 1962 to 72. He takes over the reins, and suddenly BYU is going to start passing the rock. Well, did they? We'll get into that in a minute. But before Lavelle, BYU was not good at football. 175, 235, and 24, 10 different head coaches from 1922, right, to this point of about 50 years, one conference championship, didn't make a bowl game, had one All-American, and then Eldon Fortuyn. Then you compare that to what Lavelle did, the Lavelle effect, if you will. Look at the winning percentage, the conference championships, the bowl games, the All-Americans. And we're just talking about 72 to 79
Spence.
Three outright titles. Now BYU's in the football game. Let's go.
Incredible hiring of Lavelle Edwards as the head coach. And to your point, he was on staff from 1960 on. They took a chance on a guy in 1972 to take over. And a lot of people often forget that it wasn't an immediate out-of-this-world passing attack. It did have a notable change, but it also produced the nation's leading rusher in 1972, Pete Van Valkenburgh, better known as Fleet Pete by his teammates and the media in the early 70s. 232 carries, 12th in the NCAA, almost 1,400 yards on the ground, 1,386 to be exact, 6 yards a carry. My notes have that as excellent. 12 touchdowns. That was also top 15 in the NCAA that season. So it is unique that while Lavelle clearly wanted to pass and rewrote the script on the forward pass in college football, it was the nation's leading rusher that was his headline player in 1972.
And we'll talk to Gary Scheide about this, but did Gary even believe Lavelle when he said we're going to pass? You just had the nation's leading rusher in Pete Van Valkenburgh. Gary Scheide is one of the great quarterbacks in BYU history, and he really starts things off. Virgil Carter in the 60s got BYU that WAC title in 65, 66. Virgil was amazing. To me, he's the first great BYU quarterback. It's a couple years later now, in 1973, that BYU recruits a JUCO quarterback in Gary Scheide, and he really gets this thing going as the quarterback factory started pumping out All-Americans and National Award winners. Gary Scheide shows up at BYU, and he gets things going. In fact, he decided to open up the offense with Gary Scheide, Lavelle that is, throw the ball all over the place, and he once said about not having anything to lose this when it comes to throwing the ball.
But I never in my wildest dreams ever thought that that I'd even be a head coach in college, let alone have the kind of success. And then BYU had never had great success in football, and they'd hired and fired coaches about every 4 or 5 years. And then when I took over, I just thought, well, I'm going to get fired anyway, so I might as well try something differently.
Okay. Why not?
You cannot blame him for feeling that way. Yeah. He just said, like, coaches were getting fired every few years. What do I have to lose by trying something wildly different?
They had literally tried to recruit Marines to be kind of the core of the team, and they had a certain amount of discipline, and that was welcome, of course, around these parts. But they were, you know, return missionaries, like, wasn't a thing. There wasn't a pipeline there. There wasn't a lot of Polynesian players to pull from. This is a different era of BYU football. So what are they going to do to stand out? It's throw the rock, baby.
Well, and just to show you how different things were once Lavelle took over, we have to look back at 1970 and 1971 before this aerial assault took over. In 70 and 71 combined, Jerem, 2,454 passing yards. Quarterbacks at BYU were combining to complete 43% of their passes. Not good. 7 touchdowns, and this is wild, 47 interceptions. Are you kidding me?
Both prime numbers. How about that?
7 touchdowns to 47 interceptions. BYU needed some significant help if they wanted to get this thing going in the pass attack. And then they bring in Gary Scheide. Lavelle Edwards convinces him to come to Provo, doesn't know much about BYU or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Everything is new to Gary. But BYU's offense takes full advantage of the Joe Namath clone with his right arm. Look at what he did in 1974 as the WAC Offensive Player of the Year. 4,524 pass yards, 60% completion percentage, and 45 touchdowns to 31 picks. Jerem, this is why he was the Sammy Baugh Trophy Award winner in 1974. This was unbelievable stuff from Gary.
He's the first national award winner from BYU with that Sammy Baugh for the nation's top passers you mentioned. And those were combined stats for 2 years. BYU starts to throw it, and they have this Joe Namath clone, as you mentioned. And Jay Miller catches 100 passes in a season. He's one of the great BYU receivers that have ever played here. And so it's incredible. So that 1974 team, which, by the way, this footage is so awesome. This is Cougar Stadium. It was, 9 years old at this point. They got a track there. There's no north and south ends of just, there's temporary stands, but not what we have now.
It's not expanded until 82.
No, not to 65,000 till later. The 74 team is the first team to go to a bowl game. And if you win the WAC, which had Arizona State and Arizona in it, you go to the Fiesta Bowl. And that team did, despite finishing 0-3-1, they end the regular season with 7 straight wins. They take down Arizona State, who was really the behemoth there. Lavelle's first WAC title, first bowl game. Gary Scheide gets hurt in the Fiesta Bowl. They lose that game, but 7-4-1, and they go to the Fiesta Bowl. BYU is still trying to go to the Fiesta Bowl today.
I'm glad you brought that up. You start the season 0-3-1, and then you finish 7-4-1. What a turnaround right there. And I should note, the career numbers that we gave you from Gary Scheide, that wasn't just 1974. That's 73 and 74 combined, but still, it was such a stark contrast to what BYU was doing before that. And BYU had one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country. Now, you might think, okay, it's going to be another 2 decades before we see the next great thrower at BYU. He was basically already in the room once Gary Scheide left. In comes Gifford Nielsen from 1975 to 1977. And Giff shows up and picks up right where Gary Scheide left off, running a high-powered offense. You look at his career numbers, just under 6,000 passing yards. 5830 specifically, he too with a high completion percentage at 58.6%. 55 touchdown passes by the great Gifford Nielsen, 29 picks, and a rating of a hair over 145. He finished sixth in the Heisman voting in 1976, and BYU got off to a fantastic start in the 77 season. Jerem, they were 3-0. They were ranked in the top 20, and Giff was hands down a top three Heisman candidate at that point when he suffered an unfortunate leg injury against Oregon State that ended his BYU career.
That was a massive bummer. In comes Mark Wilson, and that finishes 77. You go to 78. Lavelle says, you know what? We're going to split time. I got two good quarterbacks. I got Mark Wilson, who's coming back. I got this young guy named Jim McMahon. We'll split time. That didn't work out, as most dual quarterback things don't. They combined, you know, for about 2,800 yards passing. Neither completed a ton of balls. Negative touchdown to interception ratios. It wasn't great. And Lavelle vowed he would never do that again. So what does he do, you know, in 79 as we look at 1978? BYU still goes 9-4, by the way, 5-1 in the WAC, and wins the league despite those struggles.
Yeah, that's considered a disappointment.
Yeah. They go to the first Holiday Bowl, by the way, which BYU really helped establish. And then we're talking about 1979, which is one of the greatest teams in BYU history.
Incredible. So 77, BYU wins 9 games. They go 9-2. They finish in the top 20. Don't go to a bowl game. 78, finally get over the hump, and they win 9 games again. But they're on the cusp of what they hope is something great, and you're talking about it, Jerem. 1979, led by Mark Wilson as a senior, a first-team All-American. All Wilson does is hop onto basically any NFL draft radar when he throws for over 7,600 yards in his career, 61 touchdowns. 61. His first game when he took over for Gifford Nielsen, he got off to a good start. He threw 7 touchdown passes against Colorado State.
Not bad.
That'll always help. But wild numbers by Mark Wilson in 1979. He approached 4,000 yards just in that year. Was about 280 shy there. 59% completion percentage, 29 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. BYU was not afraid of throwing interceptions, Jerem.
No, in this hit, you go through Ty Detmer, and they are still throwing a ton of picks. But I love the face mask. I love the helmet stickers. It's just old school, and it's just awesome because now Mark Wilson wins the Sammy Baugh. He's third in the Heisman Trophy voting. BYU's in the winning WAC title game. They're in the Heisman game. They're in the quarterback game. They're in the NFL quarterback game.
Sure.
After Mark graduates, and they're just getting started, bro. Like, this show is not going to dive into Jim McMahon and Steve Young and Robbie Bosco and Ty Detmer. We'll do that in other shows. But you talk about the last three quarterbacks now for BYU of Gary Shidey, Gifford Nielsen, Mark Wilson, capped off by 1979, which we were talking about as one of the great seasons in BYU history.
11-0. They were perfect in the regular season.
At the time, this is the greatest team in BYU history. 11-0 regular season, WAC champs, Lee Corso coaches Indiana. BYU loses the Holiday Bowl because, unfortunately, they miss a late chip shot field goal. And we'll talk to Mark Wilson about this whole situation coming up. They finished 13th in the AP poll. This is a great team, Spencer. They were a field goal away from perfection.
From the first undefeated season in BYU football history. We felt strongly about documenting this because the 80s are looked upon so glowingly. And we get it. BYU won a national championship. They had Ty Detmer come into the fold in the 1980s. He wins the Heisman in 1990. This decade laid the groundwork for what BYU did in the 1980s.
A million percent.
8 years, 8 seasons in the 1970s specifically set BYU up for that magical run through the 80s decade, which we will chronicle as well in our special summer series on BYU Sports Nation. But we have to give 1970, the decade, its due credit for what it helped BYU football build to in the 80s.
Plus, we wanted an excuse to call a show That 70 Show. So this is the excuse for that. But what a decade of winning, of laying the groundwork, of putting in that foundation, and now BYU is rocking and rolling in the 80s.
BYU had not finished consistently in the top 20 and not been close to it.
Never.
Until you got to the mid to late 70s, and even in 77, when Mark Wilson takes over for the injured Gift Nielsen, they finish in the top 20. Not just ranked at some, but they finished at number 20, and they finished number 13 in 1979. Great stuff.
Special teams. Special teams.
All right, up next, let's take this conversation a little bit wider and do so with one of the great quarterbacks we were just referencing. The first great Lavelle QB, Gary Scheide joins the show after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation and BYU Football, That 70s Show. Gary Scheide, one of the all-time BYU great quarterbacks. And the guy that helped pioneer BYU's pass-happy offense under the legendary Lavelle Edwards. Look at that highlight reel. Welcome back to BYU Football, That 70s Show. The 70s era, so critical for the success of BYU football, and to help us adequately understand it even more is the great Gary Scheide, the first.
Gary Scheide in the house,
many
baby.
Many consider that long list of the quarterback factory under Lavelle Edwards. Gary, great to have you with us.
Well, it's my honor. You guys do a great job, and it's just fun to be with you guys.
All right, let's rewind to your senior year in high school and even your days as a junior college athlete. What did you know about BYU when they first began recruiting you?
That's a good point there, Spence. Coach Edwards came to my high school, and he says, Gary, we're looking at you. We want you to come to BYU. And I told him, I said, you know, Coach, I said, I appreciate the time that you made to come and visit me, but I'll be honest with you, I've never heard of BYU. So, so that was the introduction we had. We spoke about 2 minutes, and I said, thank you. I said, but I've got some other interests. And I had at least one offer from one team from every conference in the country. So I hadn't heard of BYU. So that was my initial interview there with Coach Edwards.
So how did you end up here then?
Well, then I go to, I went to junior college to elevate my status in baseball. I had a junior varsity baseball coach who was a scout for the Orioles. Came over, brought me a contract, and said, don't sign it. He says, go to junior college and up your status and play baseball. So I was going to do that. Well, about a week and a half before the season started, their two quarterbacks got hurt. So their whole team comes over to me and says, come on and play quarterback for us. You know, we want you to play quarterback. So I went to DVC, and I said, okay, I don't want to run, miles. I don't want to run sprints. I don't want to get tackled. You know, all these different things.
Play golf, Gary.
Yeah. I said, I want to throw at least 20 times a game. We will. So they answered yes to all those. So I ended up going there and playing quarterback. We won the first four games. We were ranked like number one in the country. And then I broke a bone in my wrist called the navicular bone. And it's a bone that takes 6 months to heal. Oof. So I could not play baseball that year. And I had to just wait until I thought football is my back door. Just in case, I'm going to go play football the following year. And sure enough, we go to next year playing football. After four games, we're 4-0, number one in the country, and I break my radius.
Oh.
Well, as soon as I break that bone and I'm out for the season, the first guy to come to my house, Coach Edwards calls and says, I'd like to come to your house. Can I come to your house? And he brings Pete Whip back with him. So he comes over. My mom has dinner for him, and we have just a wonderful meeting. I really like Coach Edwards. And after he left, my mom says, I really like Coach Edwards. I think you should go visit that site. You know, so I said, okay, Mom. So I went to visit, and I watched a game in the middle of the season. And it was just, when I got to the campus and I looked out at the mountains, how beautiful they were, and the fishing, the streams.
That's big for you, the fishing.
Oh, big, big. And the girls. And I mean, it was like, what the heck? This is a wonderful place, you know. So I left that place. I left that, went back home. And I told her mom, I says, I want to go to BYU.
Okay, here's the thing, though. In 72, this is the season before you come in 73, Pete Van Valkenburg leads the nation in rushing. Yet Lavelle is telling you, dude, we're going to pass it. Did you believe him?
Well, I asked him. That's the question I asked him. You know, I said, Jeremy, I said, Coach, I says, you just had the leading rusher in the nation. And he says, I know that. He says, but in order to be successful down the road, we're going to throw the football. You know, and you're going to be the guy that starts it for us. And I said, I want to believe you, but, you know, and he says, don't worry. That's what we're going to do. We're going to throw the football.
And let's specifically move to 73 and 74, Gary. Losing record in 1973. It was Lavelle Edwards' only losing record he had in 29 years as the man in
nice
charge
work, Gary.
Of BYU football.
Yeah.
But from that frustration, then came Lavelle Edwards' first WAC title and the first ever bowl game appearance when you went 7-4-1 in 1974. So that said, with that backdrop, what happened between 1973 and 1974 for BYU football to take some significant steps?
Yeah, well for me, when I first started out, right before the first game, about a week before the first game, we were playing Oregon State. And I got hit on the thigh. And it was a deep thigh bruise. And the doctor at the time was Dr. Vance, and I don't know if you ever heard that name, Dr. Vance. We said, take a chance with Vance. He was an older guy, looked like the doc on Gunsmoke, you know. So he gets the needle, and he says, I'm going to poke in here and see if we can find the blood clot. And I said, he says, did that hurt? I said, yeah. He says, how about there? Yeah. He says, all right, I'm going to try right here. And I said, are you sure, Doc? And he says, no, I'm not sure. I says, we'll just see, you know. So he takes
this
long needle, yeah, Dr. Vance, and he slams it into my thigh, and he didn't get any blood. So he tries it again, and then the blood comes spurting out. But anyway, I wasn't able to play in that first game. I wasn't ready, so I didn't start. They started somebody else, and they put me in the, I think it was the third or fourth quarter, just to get a couple plays because I couldn't move around very much. And I did a play action pass, and my first college pass there at BYU was to a guy named Sam LeBoux, and it was, I think it was 60 or 65 yard touchdown pass.
How about that?
So that was my start.
That was your first pass.
That was your first pass.
First pass at BYU. So the next game we played Utah State, and they were winning, I think it was 10-6, and we had a minute to go. And I hadn't started because of my injury. Coach Edwards says, Gary, he says, go get us a touchdown. So I go in with a minute and second, the 30-mile-an-hour wind coming at me, and we go all the way down the field. We score, but he's out of the end zone. We end up on the 2 or 3 yard line, and ever since then I started every game after that. So it took a little bit to get started there. And we got started a little bit slowly, but I think we won, four out of the last five games.
It was
games.
Seven in a row.
Was it? No,
in 74, or are you talking 73?
73, when we had that losing record, yep. So for Coach Edwards. But we won a lot in a row and started really on a roll.
So you get some momentum, and then you go into 74, and it is not a great start. It's 0-3-1, including a tie at Colorado State where there's like a botched snap at the end, and they score, and it's a disappointing kind of start to the WAC season. How'd you overcome that to win seven in a row and go to the Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, Jeremy. We had lost our first three games, and the defense was doing great, but we just couldn't get it going. We had a new offensive coordinator, and we were doing a lot of rollout passes and all that kind of stuff, his offense, and it just wasn't working. So Lavelle said, Coach, he says, we're going back to the old stuff. Drop back throwing, and we're going to pass the ball.
And
in
this
the pocket.
Is Dewey Warren?
This is Dwayne Painter. Dwayne left. Dewey was there.
Dewey came in.
When we threw the ball.
Whose nickname is the Swamp Rat.
He's
from Tennessee.
And I still talk to the Swamp Rat all
the
time.
Awesome.
So he's doing great. He's a good golfer. And anyway, he was a great guy. And it was hard when we lost him. But then we started figuring things out. We went back to our drop back again, and then the worst thing came. We're playing Colorado State. We're 0-3, but it's the first conference game. And there's, I don't know, 12 seconds to go in the game. All we have to do is take the snap and take a knee, and the game's over. So we come up the line of scrimmage, and one of the guys, the All-American linebacker, says to Oren what he's going to do to him after he hikes the ball. And it wasn't in, you know, language that we are used to hearing. And so the ball got snapped, and I hardly felt the ball. And it went right down to the ground. So I'm down there trying to find the ball, and I can't see it. And they recover. So now there's like 4 seconds left, and they threw Willie Miller, I think he was, ran a post corner, scored. The fans went crazy. The team went crazy. It was 33-33. So they got a 15-yard penalty for excessive celebration. They moved him back. They missed the extra point, and we ended in a tie.
That's the tie. That's the one tie.
You needed the tie probably, right?
Yeah.
In the conference standings later, maybe?
It was important.
You're hoping to win, of course.
Well, we didn't because we didn't lose any games in the conference. So that game kind of turned it around, and we met as captains and had some good conversations, and nobody beat us after that.
With what the Fiesta Bowl meant at the time, there were only 11 bowls at the time. It's not like now where, hey, you win six games, you go to a bowl game. That was a big deal. What was it like to clinch and go to that first bowl game for Lavelle Edwards, the first of many?
It was special. You know, I mean, we talked about it as a team. That was our goal at the start of the season, and we didn't know how realistic it was, but that was our goal. And once we achieved it, well, we had one more goal, to win that game. So we go all week. We're there with doing activities with Oklahoma State. And these guys are really, they're good athletes. They played Nebraska close and had some really good players. But they ran a 5-2 defense, the old 5-2 Okie, where the defensive ends were in a three-point stance and rushed. So we said, how are they going to defend us, you know? But all week long, we're just kind of telling them, oh, you guys are so good, we don't have a chance. And, you know, it's just, we're just the little guys here. And, you know, I hope we can just give you a game, and, you know, that week. But we knew we were going to beat them, you know. So it was just no question, just buttering up a little bit. So they come in, they bring their five guys, and we're sending our backs out in the backfield. Nobody's guarding them. So right off the bat, I think I hit 4 out of 5 passes or something like that. And then one of the guys hit me from the blind side, this guy named Phil Doakes, and separated my shoulder. So I had to go out. We were at 6-0, and then they ended up beating us 16-6. But we'd have beat them. They could not have stopped our pass.
All right, so as it's obviously frustrating in that moment, but you had attained one of the most significant individual awards of any BYU football player that senior season when you won the Sammy Baugh Trophy as the nation's best quarterback. So what was that like for you when you were told, hey, according to this foundation, you're the best quarterback in the game right now?
Yeah, that was special. I mean, I went back to Columbus, Ohio, where they had the banquet and stuff, and I was in there. I was in there with David Hum and Steve Barkowski and some of the really good quarterbacks.
NFL guys.
Yeah, in all of football. And I had a sling like this. So when I got up, you know, I didn't know I was going to get the award until they announced it at the place there. And so I went up, I said, this must have been a bad year for quarterbacks. I said, not win it with a sling like this. So, but it was really really nice. Jamal Holloway from Tennessee, I really liked that guy. I was just impressed with all those guys, just impressed with them. But it was a great honor and very special.
Luke Staley accepted the Doak Walker Award in crutches. So I don't know what it is with BYU National Award winners with injuries. Sometimes it happens. Okay, so what 73 and 74 meant? Oh, and before I get to that, Jay Miller, 100 catches in a season in the 70s. What did that mean at the time? Because that's a big deal even now.
It was the second most in the history of college football when that happened. Mm. And the thing about Jay, he didn't have great speed, but he had tremendous moves and just special hands. I mean, wherever you threw it, he was going to catch it. And I remember the one game, he had 20-something catches.
22, I think.
20, was it 22?
22. Yeah.
And we had to get the 23rd or we had to get the 22nd pass. So we were both out. And we were crushing, I think it was New Mexico, but we were both out of the game. So they put us back in. Now the guys, they know we're trying to throw a pass to him. So they got two guys up on him on the line of scrimmage. So you imagine we're trying to throw a hitch route with two guys guarding him on the line of scrimmage. It was the toughest pass I had all year to complete. We had to get that last one in there to Jay, and sure enough, he battled the two guys, got it. But it was something that I think it brought attention to BYU because Howard Twilley had done it, and then Jay Miller was the next guy to get over 100 passes.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he was the best. You know, he's arguably, to me, he's the best receiver I've ever seen at BYU, but I might be a little impartial.
You're very impartial, and you should be. He's your guy. And to what I was saying was, in 65 and 66, BYU has some notable teams and a quarterback in Virgil Carter. Here you come in 73 and 74. We're about to have Gifford Nielsen, Mark Wilson, and Steve Young, or Jim McMahon, Steve Young, right by. It's about to start. We don't know this at the time. What was it like for you to see that string of guys after you as this quarterback factory, as it came to be known, occurred, well, and you were one of the first?
You know, for me, Jerem, when they inducted me into the Hall of Fame, I asked Coach Edwards if he would present me, and he said, sure. And so he came down there, and he got up, and he said, when I told Gary we were going to throw the ball, he says, if that was not successful, he says, I probably wouldn't have been there more than a year or two, and this program would have been changed so much. But we thought Gary could do it, and he did it, and that led to Gifford and Mark and Steve and Jim and all the other ones. So somebody's got to start it. And once you see that success, BYU was ahead of the time with their coordinators they had, the quarterbacks they had, and the offense they ran, just ahead of the time. And now everybody's catching up to it and using that West Coast offense.
Okay, this whole show is to shed a light on what the 70s meant for BYU. There's a lot of focus on the 80s, and there should be. What did the 70s mean to BYU football?
You know, it's one of those things where if you look back on any type of program. I remember when I first came here, and I remember the basketball team, and the starting basketball team, Kres Mrchosic, Ambrosius, Sarkalati, Belmont Anderson, and Doug Richards. I mean, you remember those things. So now what happened as we started the tradition at BYU Everybody was remembering the names. They were Gary Scheide and Jay Miller and Larry Carr and Paul Linford and Wayne Baker, and all these names started coming up. So that meant something to the guys that wanted to come to BYU in the future. Once they see the success that these guys obtained, then they want to go to BYU and do the same thing. So I think success breeds success, and that's what happened in the 70s.
Gary, great to have you with us as we look back on the 1970s and the BYU football era specifically. And wouldn't you know, this year, 50 years to the anniversary of BYU's first ever bowl game trip. So you took the Cougars to places they had never been, my friend.
Well, you know, and it wasn't just me, Spencer and Jeremy. My team, we had a great defense, had a great offense, had great coaches. And I think they're going to try to bring us back together this year during one of the games and try to honor that team, first bowl game, first bowl team for BYU. So I hope they do that. And if they do, I look forward to seeing these guys again.
Special team, Gary. We appreciate it, man. Hey. Always fun to hang out with you at Miller Park and now here in Studio B.
Well, you guys are awesome. I always tell the guys, I said, you should see these young bucks. I said, I met them when they were about 25 years old or something. They're just tremendous, and they still do a good job. So thanks for having me.
Thanks, Gary.
I appreciate it. The great Gary Scheide with us on BYU Football That 70 Show. Up next, we'll keep this quarterback conversation rolling as we welcome in the last starting quarterback in the decade, the great Mark Wilson, who led BYU to an almost perfect season in 1979. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to a BYU Sports Nation special. It's BYU Football, That 70 Show. Alongside Jerem Jordan, I'm Spencer Linton. We're going to now look back at some of the notable NFL draft picks that BYU had in the great 70s decade, beginning with one of BYU's best pros ever, the late, great Todd Christensen.
Played fullback at BYU, then tight end in the NFL. He becomes one of the best tight ends in the league. For a while there, he was the best. Two-time first-team All-Pro, five Pro Bowls, Spencer.
Amazing.
Ridiculous numbers. He becomes perhaps the greatest tight end that BYU's ever produced in the NFL, and that's saying a lot. BYU's been a tight end factory here.
The Raiders have a lot of great players, and he was a true Raider. Yeah.
He was awesome, man.
He deserves all of those accolades.
I used to see him running on the BYU track, by the way, back in the day. He'd just be working out, and I was like, there's Todd Christensen. An incredible broadcaster, by the way.
I was going to say, had his day in the media as well as a solid broadcaster. Here are some other notable players taking from BYU in the 1970s in their respective NFL drafts. Chris Farisopoulos, a defensive back, 1971, before Lavelle took over as head coach to the New York Jets. Gordon Gravel, an offensive tackle, in 1972, went to the Steelers. Golden Richards is the name, if you're a BYU football historian, that you need to know. Wide receiver in the second round of the Dallas Cowboys.
Paul Howard was a guard with the Broncos. Wayne Baker, third round to the Niners. Brad Oates, you talk about the Oates boys.
Woo!
Boy, were they good on the offensive lines for BYU. And, of course, Matt Mendenhall, who influences one Bronco Mendenhall as his brother.
Yeah, we talked about Matt with Gary Scheide and Mark Wilson earlier as one of those great defensive players that's overlooked because of BYU's offensive success in this era.
Yep. Don't say we didn't mention the defense.
You know we're there. Up next, College Football Hall of Famer and one of the other former BYU quarterback greats in the 70s. Mark Wilson joins us in studio as we continue BYU Football, That 70s Show.
Mark Wilson, the quarterback.
Back to throw as Wilson throws. Touchdown!
That's the first time a BYU team's ever been in the top 10.
I tell you, Wilson is every bit as good as they say he is.
Welcome back to our BYU Sports Nation special, BYU Football, That 70s Show.
Not sure where
from
we got
Studio
the name
B. Yeah. And joining us now, the man who produced all of those highlights you just watched, the great Mark Wilson, quarterback. Mark, great to have you on this BYU Sports Station special.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, let's begin with this. And this will be chronological to a degree, but how in the world did BYU get you to commit at that time when you were sought after by so many programs?
Well, it's a fun, interesting story. My senior year in high school, I broke my jaw in the second game. I only played two games as a high school senior. And so a lot of the schools that were recruiting me kind of dropped out because I only had a game and a half of game film my senior season. And BYU hung in there and some others hung in there. But really the big reason I came was because of Gary Scheide.
Mm.
So my senior year in high school was Gary's senior year at BYU, and he led the nation in passing, started capturing the attention of everybody. Now, it was different. I mean, you couldn't see all the games in college football, so you'd get the paper the next day and see what was going on, and Gary was doing some magical things that had never been done, really. And this little school in Utah was doing kind of some amazing things and caught my attention. And so I started following BYU. They ended up in the Fiesta Bowl. They lost. Gary got hurt. That was a different story. But I came because of what Gary was doing and what this team was doing, and in particular what the offense was doing. And as a quarterback, you know, it sounded pretty fun to kind of be a part of that if you could, you know, get involved. And so that's why I came.
And the QB factory gets going, right? Virgil was awesome in the 60s. It's Gary. And then Giff does his thing. You're a backup there.
Yeah.
And then little young Jim McMahon and you battle it out in 78. Lavelle called that, you know, one of the most awkward, weird seasons ever, because he kind of split time there and he vowed, I'm never doing this again. Yeah. What was 78 like to kind of set the table for the special 79?
You know, I've talked about this before, and it is awkward to talk about. It's awkward to talk about because what people forget was Lavelle was genius in so many ways, but one of the ways he was a genius was he brought in people that could really teach the passing game. Because I don't think Lavelle knew much about the passing game. What Lavelle knew was that BYU could not win playing football the way that everyone else was playing it. Mm. And he had to quit trying to play it to their strengths. And so the way that he decided to do that was to change it all together and start throwing the ball and outscoring teams, right? And I know that sounds crazy today to talk about because everyone was, well, no kidding. But in the 70s, it was radical. You know, that was a seismic shift in the game. And that changed the whole game. Back to the point, Jim and I, they changed offensive coordinators. So in 1977, we had Doug Scoville, and Doug Scoville was phenomenal, came from the Chicago Bears. And Lavelle, I don't know, that's another story. You need to ask Doug's family what convinced them to come. You know, how did Lavelle convince them to come to this school in Utah, in Utah County, you know? But Doug came and instituted this offense, which has been, you know, the foundation for a lot of programs, not just BYU, the 49ers. I mean, you can trace it through so many programs, what Doug did. But Doug went back to the NFL. And in 1978, we had a new offensive coordinator that decided that he was going to change the whole thing because he felt like if we did the same things that we had done and had the same success, that he wouldn't get credit for it. So he changed everything. And frankly, it was miserable. It was a miserable experience, not just for me, not just for Jim, for the entire program.
Yeah.
It was miserable. You know, in 1977, we led the nation in every offensive category. And in 1978, I'm not sure we led the Western Athletic Conference in passing. We'd have to go back and look, but
which
I'm not.
Which was offensive to you guys.
I'm not sure we did.
Wow.
Then, fortunately, Lavelle did a pretty tricky thing. He convinced I think, University of Pittsburgh to hire this offensive coordinator. And Doug came back. And in 1979, we went right back to what we were doing again. So 78 was incredibly awkward. We got through it, but you know, there's benefits that come from everything, right? And one of the benefits of playing at BYU in that era, which is different today because of the transfer portal and all the stuff that goes on, was that you came, you were kind of stuck here.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest, right? But you were stuck competing against Gifford Nielsen and Mark Wilson and Jim McMahon, and having to go to practice every day and compete with those three guys, trust me, it elevated your game. It honed your game. And really, but for that, I'm not sure any of us would have done what we ended up doing. You know, so it was a great period of time. There was a lot of reasons why we had some success, but it all really went back to Lavelle because Lavelle had the courage to change.
Yeah.
And that gets lost. You know, people forget about that. But I often wonder what guts it took for him to take the path that he took because no one had ever taken it before. Lavelle knew we couldn't compete unless we did change. Had no idea how it was going to turn out, but was willing to kind of go down that road and figure out how to make it happen.
Like Alabama and Oklahoma have produced a couple of quarterback rooms where you look back and you're like, dude, there were like three NFL guys in that room. That's what you guys had originally.
We had the first
great quarterback room.
We had three quarterbacks. We had three All-Americans.
NFL guys,
three guys all in the College Football Hall of Fame. But this is the other thing people forget about. Gifford gets lost in this shuffle so much. Mm-hmm. I am here to tell you that Gifford would have won the Heisman Trophy in 1977 if he had not gotten hurt.
Who won it? Was it Earl Campbell?
I think it was Earl that won it, but yeah. Gifford was the leading candidate. Gifford was blowing everybody away in the first three games that he played. If he had stayed on that pace, there is no question Gifford would have won the Heisman Trophy in 1977.
Wow. Wow.
That would have happened in 1977.
So it's interesting you bring that up because three games in, I mean, you're at Oregon State. Gifford goes down. He breaks his leg. Former and longtime sports information director, great Dave Schulte, says, and I'm paraphrasing, we've seen the last great quarterback at BYU in at least the next 20 years. I mean, it was just depression.
And at least the next two quarters.
Hey, then you step in, Mark, and all you do is throw seven touchdown passes in a win over Colorado State, I think, the next week. So what were your emotions like when you saw Gift go down, and what was falling to you?
Well, you know, the first four games because Gifford, well, three games because Gifford had been so great, I played like most of the second half because
you were getting a lot
of were ahead by 50 points. You know? And what happens in that situation is Lavelle looks around and sees this skinny kid from Seattle and says, well, the guy can't cost us 50 points in a quarter and a half, so we're going to let him play.
Right.
But when you're ahead by 50 points, it's pretty fun. You know, there's no pressure. You can't really do anything wrong. And so it's really fun. And when Gifford went down, it wasn't fun. I mean, in fact, when we came back from Oregon State, I wasn't sure how bad he was hurt. Nobody was. You know, he tore his ACL, but we didn't know that at the time. That night, I went over to the hospital. I even feel the emotions now because Gifford was such a great friend to see him laying in that hospital bed with his and knowing that the season was over. And it was a magical season. And then to realize that this great team that we had, I mean, now I was going to have to play. And was I going to be able to play well enough to kind of keep this going? Or was I going to do things that were going to jeopardize the success of this great team and what Gifford had started? And what does Doug do? Doug changes the whole offense in 1 week. And we rolled out almost every play against Colorado State. And they had no idea we would ever do that. And that's what produced the seven touchdowns.
Wow.
But it was because Doug was willing to do what I kind of wanted to do, so I was comfortable going into the game. And I'll never forget Doug Scovel said, because I said, you know, why are we going to change things up? And Doug said, Mark, you're not Gifford. And so it's stupid for me to call plays that Gifford likes and make you run those plays. We need to figure out who you are, what you like, and that's what we need to focus on going forward. And that's what Doug did. Mm-hmm. And that was the magic.
Adapt or die, right?
That was the magic.
That's awesome. The bitter and the sweet. The sweet is the seven touchdowns. Then at Wyoming,
yep.
You win 10-7, you throw six picks, yet
you still win.
You're the only guy in there. You didn't get pulled. There was confidence in you.
Yeah.
What was the juxtaposition like of those two games?
Yeah, so against Colorado, they blitzed like crazy because they thought kids hasn't played forever. And so we're going to put a lot of pressure on him with this great defense we have, and we're going to see if he can hold up. And we rolled out, and we got away from the blitz, right? Wyoming said, okay, we just saw what he did against the blitz, so we're not doing that. In fact, we're only going to rush three and drop eight into zone and see if he can figure that out. And it was a totally different game, and I didn't figure it out very well. And fortunately, we threw a touchdown in the fourth quarter to win the game. But you brought up a good point. You know, I didn't get pulled in the game. In fact, you know, when you throw six interceptions in a game, after you've thrown three's kind of okay. Three, you know, but when you go over three and throw the fourth one, now you're in no man's land. And when you throw the fifth one, you're way out of bounds. And when you throw the sixth one, you don't even want to go to your sideline. they do not like you over there. You want to go. You want to go to Wyoming's side of the field because they love you over there.
The guy in the barrel loved you.
But one of the reasons we won is they ran the wishbone and they fumbled seven or nine times. I can't remember.
Oh, hey, that helps.
So I threw six picks. They fumbled seven or nine times, and at the end of the game, we kind of pulled it out and won the game.
That's great.
Wow. Okay, so we've talked about 77 and 78 and how challenging 78 was, but then comes Doug Scovel back into the fold, and you put together a magical run in 1979. At what point did you feel in the offseason from 78 to 79 that, okay, we're back?
Well, I knew as soon as Doug came back, we were back.
It was that simple.
It was that simple because I knew he was going to bring back the offense, and Doug said, I don't know what happened last year, and I don't need to know. All I know is we got a guy sitting in this room that's better than anybody we had in Chicago last year in the NFL. And then he said, we're going to get back to work. And he walked out. That was it. Mm. That was the end of the meeting. And when that happened, we all knew we were back.
That's awesome. Everyone should juice.
Everybody knew we were back.
That's amazing. Okay, Lavelle makes the decision to redshirt Jim and to start you. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you to be the guy that got the next the car keys, and then Jim takes it and drives it really well after you?
And you know, I really never thought about that much, but that was the program. You know, Gifford redshirted, mm-hmm. I redshirted, Jim redshirted, and actually the only reason Steve didn't redshirt because Steve wasn't planned to be the guy. You know, they had a different guy. He was from San Diego, and they had redshirted him, and he was the guy that was going to follow Jim, and it didn't work out, and so they went to Steve. But that's what they wanted to do, and they wanted to do it because the offense was somewhat complicated. So the longer you had time with it before you really had to kind of execute it in real time on Saturday afternoon was going to be better for you. And that worked out well for Gifford. It worked out for me well. It worked out for Jim well. It wasn't fun to redshirt for anybody, but I think it was part of the process, and it ended up having great results for all of us.
You guys play A&M in Houston, and you beat them. You go for two. You've got the San Diego State game, which we love. Your first three passes are touchdowns.
Yeah.
What was that game like to win the WAC, where your passer efficiency rating was off the charts because it was just dead?
Al Michaels is on the call for crying out loud for ABC. Yeah.
Well, it's funny that I have these memories because I can remember that so vividly. This is why, because we knew it was a nationally televised game. It was going to be a big game. We were getting a lot of publicity, which was great for the school and the university. And to warm up for that game, I couldn't complete a pass. I could not complete a pass in the warm-up for that
on
game.
On air?
With no defense. And so Scoville, you know, what do you do? So Scoville, the defense, we're done warming up. The defense has gone into the locker room, and Scoville doesn't want to take us in the locker room until his quarterback has at least completed one pass. And I finally complete a pass, and Scoville says, okay, great, let's take it into the locker room. I'm sitting in the locker room before the game thinking, this is a really good time to forget how to throw a football. Right before a nationally televised game, we're 9 or 10 and 0 or whatever we are.
Yep.
This is great timing to not know how to throw a football at this time in your life. And went out. So there was nobody more shocked what happened in the first three plays than me.
You're up 21-0 before you can say San Diego State.
Yeah, it was great.
That was wild.
But Jack Murphy State.
You win that WAC championship. You got the first road win over a top 20 team when you beat Texas A&M. And so grateful that you were okay to play in that game. But as you look back on that 79 season as a whole, what was it, aside from Doug Scoville coming back, that made that team and the players special?
Well, it wasn't just Doug Scoville. You know, in fact, we had genius on both sides of the ball, and this gets forgotten. Fred Whittingham was the defensive coordinator, and Fred Whittingham was every bit of a genius as Doug was on the offensive side. And the combination of those two things was just incredible. But I think what really was the magic for our team was, you know, we would start games really fast. And oftentimes by the end of the first quarter, we were up by 20 points, and by halftime, sometimes we're up 35 or 40 points. And it totally took the other team out of their element, right? And it forced them to do stuff that they didn't want to do and they weren't necessarily good at. And it forced them right into the hands of our defense, because our defense was fast and it was nimble, and it probably wasn't going to hold up against a team that was a big, bruising, 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of thing if we were going to play the whole game that way. But if we could get ahead and force them into a passing situation to try and catch up, they would play right into the hands of our defense. And so the offense kind of did its thing. They would jump ahead early, put pressure on their offense that played right into the hands of our defense. And the combination of the two, we had a great season. And we had a phenomenal team.
Well, here you sit now. Your jersey is retired in the stadium that's named after one of your great mentors and man you look up to in Lavelle Edwards Stadium. So what was that moment like for you to have your number retired along with Robbie Bosco and Luke Staley in that ceremony?
Well, it was great. And, it was great to share that with Robbie and Luke. It really was. It was a flood of memories. I was so grateful to have been a part of that. So grateful for so many people that made that happen for me. Lavelle, Patty, you know, Lavelle, in my mind, Lavelle and Patty were a team. And Patty, a big part of my wife and my life. We love her as much as we love Lavelle. So it was just a flood of emotions, so grateful to have been at that school during that particular time in my life, so grateful to have people like Lavelle and Patty in our life, and so grateful to have such great teammates over all those years.
Mark, so great to catch up with you. We appreciate the stories,
yeah,
the insights into an incredible decade of BYU football and an era that we need to remember.
That's why we're doing this show, Mark. Got to tell the people.
Yeah, it was a great time. It does deserve to be remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, we'll continue our discussion on why the 1970s is maybe the most important decade in the history of BYU football. This is a BYUSN special.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation rolls on from Studio B. It's BYU Football, That 70s Show. Alongside Jerem Jordan, I'm Spencer Linton. What an amazing recap and fun show today.
It was fun to dig into the 70s, see what was there, laid the foundation for the 80s, and 80s part one and two coming up later as well.
Don't forget about the pioneers. And I chose that word specifically, of BYU football
Very nice.
The 70s.
You don't have to walk the planes to be a pioneer, Spencer.
Our thanks to today's outstanding quarterback legend guests, Gary Scheide and Mark Wilson.
Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time.
For Jerem, I am Spencer. Another shout out to the Swamp Rat, Dewey Warren. Go Kooks! And can we bring back the 70s fashion?